So Fitchberry came out of something that I struggle with. I've been diagnosed with high anxiety, and you can see my hands shiver a little bit. And then I kept wondering what I can start and how I can help myself pitch better.
Your platform is particularly interesting because there's a couple of other industries that you've identified as where people might challenge to seem credible and you know, impressive enough.
There is a free version, and so you can sign up, you can practice, put your own scenarios in there and practice. You get 2 free practices per week, and it resets every week.
Welcome to another episode of Melbourne Picks My Brain, the special episodes here at the Cremorne Digital Hub in Melbourne, where I'm sitting down with startup founders from the Melbourne startup community. And we're just doing Pick My Brain, but live at Cremorne Digital Hub. Thanks for joining. And also joining me this morning is Dilip Jacob.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Founders scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone, anywhere, get visas handled fast, and get back to building. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
Wondering how your AppSec program really stacks up? Galar Cyber's application security assessment gives you a quick 10-minute pulse check built around the 5 core principles of AppSec: inform, integrate, influence, innovate, and iterate. In just 10 minutes, you'll get a clear snapshot of your maturity across each of these principles, along with practical insights you can put to work straight away. Head to galarcyber.com.au/assess and take the assessment today. That is galarcyber.com.au/assess.
Dilip, you're the solo founder and CEO of Pitchberry, is that right?
That's right.
Thanks for coming on the show, mate. You were just saying before we went to where that we'd met before about 8 years ago at UTS Startups in Sydney. Yeah. What's brought you to Melbourne?
Career. And much cheaper.
Much cheaper place to live. Yeah.
And then I've just stuck here after that.
Oh, cool. It's about 2 or 3 degrees centigrade, as far as I'm concerned, outside today in freezing cold
and
rain.
And it is a bit of an adjustment weather-wise to come to Melbourne. But yeah.
And they do different things here. You know, yeah. I don't know how much time you've spent getting yourself involved in things like AFL, the footy.
That was one of the first questions they asked me when I actually joined my first job in Melbourne. Like, which team do you like? And they forced me to like Collingwood.
You forced me to like Collingwood. Do you know that happened to my father when he arrived in Australia from the UK when he was 21 years old?
Right.
And then, so maybe that's the thing that's how Collingwood acquires new. You know? So I was you know, born a Collingwood supporter too, but then, you know, all of my adult life I've lived outside of Melbourne. But I recently moved to Melbourne, and I knew it was important that I was going to have to choose a team.
It is very important that you choose a team.
I asked LinkedIn to tell me, and I said, okay, your LinkedIn friends, you know, given what you know of me and who I am, you know, what clubs should I be interested in? And it was really interesting. Like, people really like associate AFL clubs with particular kinds of people and particular values and mindsets, don't they?
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, in case you're curious, I'm now official paid up member of St Kilda Football Club.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They've made significant investment in mental health care for their club and also for the community that they're part of. And also they have an Indigenous athlete support program, which both of those things I think are pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
And they're not top of the table, but neither are they bottom. And that's really probably where I am in life too. But Dilip, when we first met, you were the startup of something completely different. Now you're the startup of Pitchberry. Tell us about what Pitchberry does.
So Pitchberry came out of something that I struggle with. I've been diagnosed with high anxiety, and you can see my hands shiver a little bit.
Under the table.
That's why it's under the table. So I kind of panicked when I was pitching at UTS in an investment pitch event. And so I came back, and I always wanted to do my startups, but the Rosted, which was my previous startup, kind of failed due to COVID. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Melbourne. And then I kept wondering what I can start and how I can help myself pitch better.
Great.
And I thought maybe that's something that other founders would benefit from as well. And yeah, and with that idea, I kind of also incorporated, would it be a place where I can validate my idea?
So like everything is now in software, Pitchbury is an AI software platform that helps people in particular professions who need to be able to speak convincingly to people, learn how to be more convincing and more credible in their jobs, right? And correct. What I think is interesting about what you're doing is there are products mostly focusing on telesales and maybe a little bit on in-person sales. So people in sales roles got to pitch to customers, and selling something to people is not easy.
Yeah.
But I think your platform is particularly interesting because there's a couple of other industries that you've identified as where people might challenge to seem credible and you know, impressive enough. And what are a couple of those professions? I think there was police.
There's doctors, lawyers, even, you know, celebrities when they're talking to media, getting interviews. Uh-huh. Myself, when I'm pitching.
Product manager. Yeah, solo
founders. Everyone.
Not investors. I've never met an investor who doesn't seem
What we are targeting is jobs that rely on the conversations that they have.
Yeah.
So a doctor, it's very hard for a doctor to diagnose properly if they don't get the right information from the from the patients.
Yep.
Right. And
and patients can be reluctant to talk to a doctor that they don't think is old enough or
correct
Anglo enough or
yeah.
You know, so if the more credible you are as a professional, the more you're going to get better results out of your work, right?
Yeah. Dentists is another example where they...
Sorry, I'm laughing because I'm just thinking of the dental patient.
Yeah. Dentists, they have to, especially international dentists, when they come to Australia and want to work in Australia, they have to pass an exam called OSCE, which is very hard exam to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And the main exam is communication-based. So...
I didn't either.
One of my friends had this issue, and I was like, "Oh, maybe I should try that." And that's how I launched the product, which I never in my wildest dreams I thought I would enter dentistry. But the launched the product, and I got like 300 plus users signed up.
Correct. So yeah, tell us about the go-to-market stage. So you're in market, you've got a product that people can use, and you've got 300 people on the platform. Is there a free trial version people can use and then they convert? What's the conversion rate there roughly at the moment?
So there is a free version, and so you can sign up, you can practice, put your own scenarios in there and practice. For dentistry specifically, I've added a lot of dentistry specific cases so that they don't have to manually enter it. You get 2 free practices per week and it resets every week. If you want more than that, then you pay a $30 subscription, which gives you 15 practices and unlimited case creations. With a free one, you just get 1 free case creation per week.
Okay. AI-powered businesses consume tokens. Tokens cost money. How are you thinking about how to structure the revenue that you get from customers versus the operating cost of running the platform?
Yeah, this was a hard one to... crack for me, but the way I went about is I wanted to prove that this is actually valuable to new customers. So I that's why I went through with free offerings, and to be honest, majority of them are free users. But the way I'm thinking about it is now that I've proved that it is working, I'm approaching educational institutes, coaching institutes, police academies, just to make sure that I can approach them and they can incorporate this into their curriculum so that medical students, dentists can actually practice before they actually come out of the...
Don't forget about startup founders either.
Startup founders.
You mentioned the Antler program before. You know, I do a lot of pitch coaching for StartMade founders, for a number of university programs, and that's, you know, I get to spend sometimes, you know, the Lumina X program up in Queensland allows me to spend a whole day with their founders, but it's only one day, right? So there's only so many times you can go through it in a day, and only so much progress you can make in a day. And also I've usually got at least 10 startup founders going through that training with me. So they all have to share the time. I think it's a really powerful and interesting idea to have something where you can make further progress on how you pitch in your own time when it's convenient to you.
Yeah.
Founders scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone anywhere, and get visas handled fast so you stay focused on scaling. Deel takes care of onboarding, HR, IT, EOR, benefits and compliance, so your team can grow without borders. It's why more than 40,000 fast-growing companies trust Deel to move fast. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
Do you have like any challenges at the moment? Is it tough to be a solo founder?
It is. It's very hard for me to reach out to people and ask for some time to actually get the conversation going. So I'm trying to get a co-founder at the moment, but then I find it very difficult to actually reach out. And
can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Yeah. I think there's a mindset challenge here that I struggle with all the time too. You know, when I'm out raising capital for Mate Ventures, I often talk about, you know, and we're trying to raise a round of, or we're hoping to raise a round of, and that obviously doesn't sound as convincing or likely to succeed as saying to people, we're in the process of raising, or I'm in the process of securing a co-founder who's going to do this.
Yeah, so, that makes sense.
Little bits of language, you know, change what our audience hears, and also it changes what we believe internally, right? So yeah, sorry, you're in the process of...
No, that's actually, well, I might actually add that into Pitchberry to help.
That's free. That's free.
Yes, thank you. That's in the process of getting a co-founder.
Because as a startup founder, you've got to wear lots of different hats, don't you?
And absolutely.
Not all of them are very flattering. You know, I learned from experience that this is just about the only kind of cap that I can wear to hide my middle-aged baldness. But you know what? So like you, I was a product person. And there are other parts of the leadership team of a startup that I, you know, the hat that you wear when you're a CFO does not fit me. It doesn't look good, right? And the hat is the chief of sales. Yeah. You know, the chief of sales hat. I'm pretty terrible at that as well. So how we identify those people and how we make this opportunity exciting for them is a bit of a challenge. Do you have some thoughts about what's going to motivate somebody to join you and be co-founder?
I'm trying to go through. So I have one person who is kind of interested in joining me, and she's really into the startup world, and she already has a great startup, so she's going to help me on the side.
Great. Great. Getting into a fractional relationship of any kind with somebody, whether they're contributing some hours just because they like you, or whether because you're helping them with their startup, you know, so like a contra sort of relationship, this is a really good early step.
Okay.
You know? But becoming someone's co-founder is as, you know, perhaps arguably even more difficult a relationship to manage and to make succeed than perhaps a marriage.
Yes. You know? I've heard that a lot, especially in Antler.
Like it's better. So we must date for a long while, right? Before anybody proposes to anybody else that we spend the next 10 years together. You know, best way to do that is through some kind of contra or fractional kind of role where both parties are getting some benefit. And what you're really testing is yes, okay, the quality of the work and the output and the commitment and the belief in the mission.
Yep.
But very importantly, how does the relationship work? How does that relationship work between the two of you?
Mm.
Because you will spend a lot of waking hours together.
Yeah.
And those waking hours have to work smoothly. It actually has to be a multiplier. You know, you have to work more productively as a team of two than you do as a team of one.
Yep.
So yeah, ease into those. Right. And like, where do we find those candidates? Do you take opportunities to, so you've got this one friend. What's the plan B?
So YC has this co-founder matching platform, which is really good.
Oh, okay. What's that called?
YC. If you go to Y Combinator's website and co-founder matching, you just sign up and you get matches from all across the world. And you can join as a co-founder or you can get someone.
Cool.
The other place is networking. You just go and for all the startup networking events.
Yeah, cool, cool. So just like, you know, personal relationships, make sure that you establish some form of prenup between you, you know, that and you will be probably both starting from as peers, right? So so a prenup and a startup co-founder relationship is not about I'm the breadwinner and you're the homemaker and, you know, that sort of traditional binary hetero kind of way of running a marriage. It's much more about actually we're both working professionals and we both have skills and experiences. Yes. And this is what I'm going to bring to our joint venture, and this is what I'm going to not bring to the joint venture. This is my side gig, or this is my, you know, ridiculous fitness regime or whatever. Like, I've got to carve out those things that's not available to Pitchberry, you know? So getting that out on the table up front can really help later on when the pressure is on.
Yeah.
What other challenges do you have as a solo founder of Pitchberry?
Whether to get funding or not. Reason for asking that is getting funding should help me scale across the globe faster. And when I say faster, I mean by hiring a good team who can help me scale, and also getting contacts across the globe. But the other side is, right now I'm not really, if it's just me, I don't need funding because I have one B2B client pretty much ready to go.
Okay.
And the other one is in talks. So so I'm just a bit confused whether or not I need to do it.
Yeah. So look, you know, the goal should be without funding to build a profitable business, right? So that you can start taking a market salary out of this, and other people you hire start to get a well compensated job in a nice workplace with a smart team that enjoys being together. You know, that's utopia. And so, you know, primarily the advantage of bootstrapping your way to success is that you're in control of how fast that happens and who's involved and the strategic direction of the business, right? So when you have other shareholders in the business, whether they are co-founders or outside investors, more people are going to want to be involved in all of those questions and decisions.
Right. Yep.
So it's not like, you know, raising investment gets a lot of press.
No.
For kind of good reasons, because it's exciting when that happens and it visibly exposes the value being created in a business. You know, if somebody values your business at $20 million all of a sudden, you know, it's been a business that still isn't paying you a market salary, but now it's notionally worth $20 million. Like, that's exciting. So everybody wants to talk about that and hear about that, right? But actually, you know, a number of the best startup businesses in Australia have been bootstrapped almost all of the way or all of the way. So companies here, I'm thinking like Campaign Monitor, the big email marketing platform. Atlassian, very famously, didn't raise any capital for the longest time.
Yeah.
So I would say for most people, if you want to be in charge of the destiny of the business and the kind of workplace and the strategic direction, then perhaps bootstrapping is if you see a path to bootstrapping, take it. Investors love to see a business which is profitable and growing fast, and they may come knocking on your door and say, hey, you could grow so much faster with a bit of capital. That's a very different starting place for a negotiation around how much your company is worth and whether you would take their investment. So if you go the investment pathway, it's still a wild and crazy ride and can be a lot of fun. It can be very successful, but you're sharing some of the decision-making with other people, and you may not always see eye to eye to them. But also, you know, most of us find when we pitch our startup to investors, they hear back that it's not a good fit for us, you know, so it's not in the right sector or a right stage or showing the right sort of metric performance that investor is looking for, or often it's too early, you know, which doesn't mean we're not ever going to invest in you, and it doesn't mean we never want to hear from you again.
Yep.
It means let's hear from you over time and study your progress towards the sort of goals that we would like to see you achieve before we're ready to invest. And then quite often there'll be some sort of mismatch around the amount invested and the sort of pre-money valuation that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, quite a bit to learn around. You know, there's jargon involved and there's process involved, and you know, that can be a whole.
That is something I'm not looking forward to.
But, you know, it can be great. And the right sort of investors come with advice, with access to a network that might provide you with new hires or with potential customer introductions. So good capital comes with more than just the money.
Yeah.
But there's basically, you know, to answer the question, should I seek funding? There are four things basically that you need. You don't have them all just yet, but I can see pathways you might be able to get there, right? So the four things that every founder needs to be investable is, first of all, a rockstar team.
Yep.
Solo founders very rarely wear all the different hats.
Yeah.
Equally well, and a business which is created by a solo founder has a high key person risk, you know. you and I step out of here into busy Richmond and one of us gets hit by a passing Uber. if it's my business is in trouble. If it's your business, your business is gone overnight, right? So why would an investor say, I'm going to invest in a business that could be taken out by a stray Uber? So adding a team to a business is probably one of the things that you need.
Yeah.
And the definition of a rockstar team, unfortunately, like the most rockstar teams, are teams that built a business quite like this previously and it was commercially successful. You know, because you already have that, like you've already been married before and you know how to work together as a team and you still love each other and you have relevant skills and experience for something a bit like Pitchberry, and now you're going again, you know, and it was commercially successful. Investors can see a pathway to them getting a return on their investment. So the number one team is probably the hardest of all in Australia, but we can make incremental progress towards that goal if we set aside some time, we set some goals and we see, you know, create a conversion funnel. You know, how am I going to create a rockstar team? What are the stages in that conversion funnel? How do I fill the top of my funnel and make sure that I spend some of my time each week taking some of those candidates down to that conversion funnel? The next thing is unique, commercially applicable intellectual property. It needn't be intellectual property that you've patented. I probably wouldn't recommend that anybody patent anymore. I think the patent system's pretty broken. But something which is difficult perhaps to replicate, something which is unique and that is, there's not, you know, a million very similar things out there in the market, and something which you can prove has some commercial value. So that can be challenging in an age of AI, right? Because the moat, the defensive moat that we used to build around a SaaS generation software business, you know, if it took 1,000 hours to build this big mature SaaS platform that's turning over, you know, 10 mil ARR, nobody in their right minds would go, oh, yeah, we're going to take that on and do another 1,000 hours just to catch up to where you are now. Yeah. You'll be, you know, 1,000 hours ahead of us when we do. You know, no investor's going to back that vision. But now, of course, with AI, you know, maybe 1% of that cost to build a replicable platform. And maybe we could do it in a couple of months. And then we could eat your lunch, right? So we can't just go, okay, I'm a solo founder and I'm building an AI startup and, you know, my defensive mode is going to be the excellence of my product because I can just point Claude at you and go and get one in 48 hours, right? So what else can we build? You know, nobody really knows. That's the way that AI is changing, software is changing so fast. Nobody really knows. Now, if they tell you that they do know, they're deluded probably, or they're trying to sell you something. But I have an evolving hypothesis, and I think probably the value of things, none of us are really going to get to work at the foundational layer. We're all going to be building applications on top of somebody else's foundational layer. I think there is still huge value to be captured in the actual context. So the context of the user, in some cases, the context of the organization and other ways. So we should all be thinking about how do I get the user to give me more input? You know, when you're doing anything with an AI, you know, there's a little up and down button that says, you know, this answer was helpful.
Yes.
Right. And sometimes it'll pop up and it'll ask you why you clicked on the button.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but I almost never do. And I bet most users never do. Right.
But so as product managers, you still put it there.
So even the giants in this industry aren't doing a very good job of, you know, except by, you know, they're attacking it at scale. So like less than 1% of the users ever click the up or the down button.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, I don't know, 2 billion users. So they're starting to capture some data. We're not, it's going to be a long while before we get to 2 billion users. So how do we capture more context from our users in the meantime? So although it is possible for us to create an AI experience for a customer where there's minimal input for them, you know, they just write what they want and their AI just does the whole project for them. I think actually the value from an investor perspective and maybe from a founder perspective is how do I actually make that more of a two-way dialogue with my customer, which is not too onerous for them and doesn't feel slow. But if I'm having more of a two-way conversation, I'm capturing more context in that user. And that might be my best defense against people competing with me, because I will always understand my customer. I will always understand my user better than my competitor does.
Yes. That's actually really good.
I'll be going that way.
It's built, defining what a moat is in the AI space has been really, really hard.
So I think it's all about context and brand relationship. So the customer's relationship with our brand. Most of us have no experience in brand. That's another hat. I think brand people wear that hat upside down. I'm not quite sure what they do. But brand is a science. You know, people spend their whole career learning how to be a brand strategist.
Yes.
We don't have that much time. But everything that we can spend on experimentation in that overall brand experience we have with our customers.
Yeah.
What are the touch points we have with them, and how consistent is our brand experience? What's our voice like, and how consistent is that across the channels? How do we make our customer clear that we actually really care about their relationship with us?
Yeah.
Right. And how do we help them understand that we're surfacing a problem that perhaps they weren't aware that they had, or we're surfacing a new solution to a problem that they were aware that they had, but they didn't realize there were new solutions.
Yep.
So if we're always thinking about the voice that we use and how we do that messaging, it can help us in the long term.
Yeah, makes sense.
Already people are forming alliances between the different foundational models. Already people are forming brand relationships with the relational models. You can see how Anthropic and OpenAI's share of the enterprise AI market has changed just in the last few months.
Yeah.
You know, when Anthropic came out and said, no, we're not going to allow the US government to make robots that kill people and spy on US citizens. I assume that's why all of a sudden corporate America started dropping OpenAI, which said, yeah, sure, you want to build death robots? That's fine with us. Enterprise, thanks, Sam. You know.
I actually stopped OpenAI subscription and started Claude subscription immediately after that.
There you go. I think that happened millions of times over the course of the last few months.
Yeah.
So brand relationship matters. Anthropic didn't have to do that. It could have just said, yeah, you know, any kind of revenue is good.
Yeah.
Instead, they said, actually, it's important to us that it speaks about who we are as an organization, and that speaks to our brand.
That's true.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
Mate, it was really great to meet you today.
Oh, it was amazing. Thank you so much.
I want to encourage all of our founders listening to the show and all of our investors, even if they are confident, to take a look at Pitchberry. What's the domain name?
Pitchberry.ai.
Cool. PitchBerry.ai. There's a free version. Please don't use the free version too much, because remember, this poor man here is consuming tokens.
Thanks for that.
But give it a go, and if it works for you, like, go for the paid version. You know, let's see what kind of lifetime value, what kind of LTV Pitchberry can achieve in the next 12 months, just with the listeners of the My Brain podcast. Yes,
that'll be amazing.
Man, thank you so much for coming
on
the show.
Thank you so much. It was really insightful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you out there.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me for this and every episode of Pick My Brains, the advice podcast for every startup founder. Never mind the don't forget to like and subscribe bullshit that every podcast host goes on about. Instead, please take a moment to think about someone you know who could use some of the advice I've shared and tell them that they should listen to it. I don't know, maybe they'll choose to like and subscribe. Anyway, I'm not a lawyer or an accountant, and what you've heard today is not intended as financial or legal advice. You should always seek that from a qualified professional before making the big decisions. And I'm not a superhero either, so don't forget that sometimes I'm fallible, and very occasionally I might even be wrong. Please let me know when you think I might be, so I can get better at this too. Just reach out to me on any of our social channels, or email the show at pickmybrain@startupfoundercoach.com. Speaking of startupfoundercoach.com, that's where you might sometimes find show notes, transcripts, and bonus bloopers if I have the time. The Pick My Brain podcast is produced, edited, and beamed directly to your ears by the hardworking and understaffed team at Day One, the podcast network for founders, operators, and investors. Find out more at dayone.fm. Thanks for listening.